Blue Sky recently celebrated his 40th year creating art. A Columbia native, the 72-year-old has given numerous public works to his hometown throughout his lively career.
All right, so what made you decide to change your name to Blue Sky?
Okay, it came as an impulse, mm-hmm. just an impulse. And it had been raining for 3 weeks, one spring, 1974. It had rained for 3 weeks, and it had been a rainy winter, too. So it had a lot of rain, and I came down to go to the grocery store. I lived up here on Green Street, and I came down here to Five Points. It used to be a grocery store right over there where CVS is, and I got some groceries. And I came out of the grocery store. When I went in the grocery store, it was raining. When I came out, I looked up, and the clouds, which had blanketed the city for a long time, had opened up, and a big hole had formed in the clouds. And you could look through the clouds, the hole in the clouds, and see bright, clear blue sky. And since it had been so long since I'd seen blue sky, you know, it makes you more aware of things. It's like when you haven't seen things for a long time, you become more aware. And I thought, man, you know, we need to see the sky. I mean, it's like something that we need, like a vitamin that we need or something. We need vitamin sky. And I was so overcome by it, I thought, I had been doing some LSD stuff. And so I had a friend who's a lawyer, and I went to him and said, I want to change my name to Blue Sky. That day, that very day. And he said, are you crazy? You got a great name, Warren Edward Johnson, a great English name. Why would you want to change it to Blue Sky? People think you're crazy. Go home and think about it. So I went home and thought about it, came back and said, I still want to do it. He said, okay. So he managed to slip it in some papers by a judge. The judge was signing a whole bunch of papers. Yeah, I mean, it was like summonses and things like that. And he slipped it in there, and the judge has signed it. The judge, and I've even read the paper. So then it was changed at the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and then it was official.
So you've exhibited in Chicago and New York and Washington and all over the U.S. So what's kept you in Columbia?
Well, my family's been here for a long, long time, I mean, generations, and Lynn's family has too. And this is home, you know. We have traveled, and there are a lot of amazing places that you can go see. But you know, to quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, you ever read any Emerson?
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Travel is a fool's paradise." What he meant was, people go travel to see wonders and to see things they haven't seen. That's fine. But the true wonderful thing in life is to see things around you in a new light. That's the most important thing. That's what true education is. The ability to perceive things about things you see all the time in a whole new way. You know, that's what education is. Travel is just, you know, like handing toys to a baby, you know, just, you know. I have spoken.
So recently in Columbia, they've added that new artist arcade, and there have been efforts to make Columbia more artist-friendly.
You mean the one at the old Taps building?
Mm-hmm. And so they've been trying to, I guess, get an art movement kind of going in Columbia. And as someone who's been an artist in Columbia for a while, do you believe the city is moving in the right direction with that?
Talk about artist movements. There is already an artist movement in Columbia. Columbia is a very active city when it comes to art. All the ballet companies, all the writers, play, the drama groups, you know. Columbia is blessed with a whole bunch of artistic activity. But I tell you right now, There's only so much pie, you know, money. Columbia is not a rich city. It's a relatively poor city, you know, when you compare it with some of the other cities. Like Charlotte, for example, there's a prosperous city. I remember when Columbia and Charlotte were the same size, but I don't know what happened. But suddenly Charlotte just took off and Columbia stayed exactly where it always was. But I like that about Columbia. I like the way it doesn't change, you know. In fact, if I could push a button right now that would make everything stay exactly the same for the rest of my life, I would do it. I'd say, okay, don't tear down anything. Everybody, I would be perfectly happy with that. But there are other people who think that by having economic progress, they're going to be a whole lot happier. Well, that's not true. It's like Ernest Hemingway said, the invention of the airplane and the fact that the airplane is faster than a horse, are we any better off for that? That's what Hemingway said. No, we're not. Foolish people think that the faster we go, the happier we're going to be. That's ridiculous thinking. That's not reasoning at all. In fact, if you talk to the mystics and the people worldwide, they'll all tell you that the way to find happiness is by slowing down. So, prefacing my answer with this, there's no need for the artistic community in Columbia to grow. I mean, in fact, if you ask me, I'd say, don't even teach kids art. Why would you teach kids art? It used to be if a person took up art because they had talent, you know, inclination. There's no need to educate everybody about art. You know, in fact, and on top of that, here I am, I'm trying to earn a living in Columbia as an artist. And we got only so much pie, remember, a little pie. You can't slice that pie up into so many slices that nobody will have anything. If you got thousands of artists in Columbia, which we're getting, by the way, the pie gets thinner and thinner, the slices get thinner and thinner, so we can barely operate this gallery now because there's so many artists out there. See, the person who goes out to buy art, they don't know who's any good or who's not. They're overwhelmed by artists. Everybody's an artist. I mean, everybody's, the art school over there is just churning out like an assembly line. You know, it's like coming off of a conveyor belt. You know, artist. And they're all out there. And everybody's trying to make a living. And nobody is, are they? I mean, look at them. They're not making any money up there. They're all hopeful that they're going to make it, but they're not. There are too many artists in Columbia. I say fewer artists. I say, take the architectural profession. If you're an architect and you have a certificate as an architect, you have to maintain your standards by educational courses. You have to learn the building codes. You have to learn the electrical codes. And they test you on this periodically. Art is a profession. I'm a professional artist. I've been to school. I've studied New York, Mexico City, Columbia. I'm a professional. Don't go gumming up the works, having all these amateur people coming in claiming to be artists. And look what's happened. Nobody's making any money. Nobody can support themselves anymore. Not even I can support myself. And anyway, that's, as Forrest Gump said, that's all I got to say about that.
Drive down Taylor Street in Columbia, and it's hard to miss the giant 40-foot fire hydrant. Weighing in at 675,000 pounds, Busted Plug Plaza was designed by Sky to celebrate the AgFirst Farm Credit Bank's 75th anniversary.
Halfway through the project, we were informed by the city that they were afraid that a storm was going to come on and it was going to rip the fire hydrant up out of the ground and it was going to become a battering ram and go around the city battering down all the other buildings. I swear, that's what they thought. And so they said it had to be able to survive a tornado, the direct hit of a tornado. So we had to hire a very expensive engineering firm. And it ended up, a lot of the money was spent on engineering. And then there was the problem with hydrants made out of basically aluminized steel. But steel and aluminum, when they get wet, like in a rainstorm, form a chemical corrosive process, and so all that had to be figured out. There was a lot of engineering. I think it's over-designed. I think, you know, the chances that a tornado is going to hit that thing direct is very remote. And I think it could have been done for a lot less.
All right, well, unlike Festival Plaza, and you had to have that one approved by design committees and that kind of stuff before you did it. When you did Never Bust, you kind of did that one secretly.
Secretly, out in the country, built it out in the country. I'd already gotten approval from Sylvans and whoever owned the Crest building. They wouldn't put up any money for the project, but they said I could do it. And so in the middle of the night, we came in with the trucks, a crane and everything. We came in and right in the dark, you know, with the lights, spotlights, everything. We put it up there and we were gone by morning and it was up there. Like people come to work on Monday morning, there it was, you know.
Was there a particular reason you felt you had to secretly install it? Or?
Because it would have never been approved. The city would have said, no way. So we decided to do it and then ask forgiveness. And the first thing that the city did, as soon as they found it, by the way, they didn't see it for about a week. You know, most people don't ever look up. But finally, when they did see it, they said, that's got to come down. That was our first response. That's got to come down. So here's the, you know, did the city do, the city, they would have never approved it. That's why I didn't ask them, you know. I've got projects now that I'm afraid to ask them if I can do. Because I know they will not approve it.
Can you tell us anything about those projects?
Ooh, I got a good one. Kind of naughty. I can't tell you anything about it.
Not even what color it is?
Silver.
Silver? What do you feel you've given to Columbia and to the world through your art?
First, there's one thing about all my public work, that is, if anybody looks at it and thinks it's art, then I've failed. Because it's not meant to look like art. I want it to look like something bizarre and something they've never seen before. And the last thing I want them to think is it's art. And consequently, because it does not look like art, it's really hard to talk to anybody about it, raise any money for it. The reason I don't want it to look like art is because the purpose of my work is to jolt the senses, jolt you into believing something that's not true, that's just a, you know. But what I live for is just that moment between the first time they see it and the first time they figure it out. That moment of disbelief, you know, that moment of kind of an electric thrill that you see when you see something, you don't know what it is.